Welcome to the Financial Bees Podcast, the practice owner's guide to maximize practice value and create personal financial success. Your host, Eric Miller, is the co-owner and chief advisor at Econologix Financial Advisors. He is also a national speaker and published author in financial matters focused on practice owners at every phase of ownership.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Financial Bees Podcast for veterinarians. Sorry. This is where we show you as veterinary owners how to make sure that you are harnessing the power of your practice, building personal wealth and going out at the top of your game. I'll be your host, Eric Miller. I'm here with, of course,
as always, Eric Gersh.
And today we're going to be talking about the corporate buying rush.
Yes. Yes. This has been a very, very large topic over the last couple of years, really going all the way back to probably 2018 when it started heating up. But 2018 to 2022, it was very, very, very common and a little less common today, but we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, I think funny thing is that, I got my first vet client in 2010. You were probably still working somewhere in Jacksonville or even in Michigan at that point in time, weren't you?
No, I was up in New York, actually.
Yeah, there you go. So I got my first vet client in 2010 and then slowly accumulated them over the next 7 years. And not one of them sold their practice.
Wow.
Not one. Not one.
It's crazy.
Didn't even think about it. And then all of a sudden in 2017, I remember that I had a client that sold their practice. It was probably a $2.2 million practice and it sold for $6.5 million.
Jeez. That came out of nowhere.
And I was like, what in the world is going on here?
Yep. I remember that one
because it defied all logic when it came to why someone, what they look at as far as profitability. And this one was all about location. That was it. It was just the location of that practice that made them, you know, it was a nice building. They had a couple of vets. I mean, they had multi vets. I mean, there were some things that they were doing right, but primarily it was just the corporate saw the location. We're like, oh yeah, we need this practice as part of our portfolio. So it just goes to show you, you know, location does make a difference. But that being said, ever since 2017, just like you said, from 2017 to 2000, really, I guess, the end of 2021, maybe even beginning of 2022, it was just a madhouse.
Yes.
It was a madhouse. And I never seen anything like it before in my life.
No, I remember it was almost monthly, at least monthly. One of the vet clients would come to us with an LOI that was just huge. I mean, multi-million dollars.
Yeah. I mean, who'd have thought that these vet practices at the corner, you know, would be worth 5 million, 8 million, 10 million. What was the biggest one that we saw?
I want to say
it was over $20 million. I'm sure.
Yeah. Had to be
20, 22, 25.
I think million. It was 22.
Yeah. $22 million. So, I mean, that's incredible. So now the question is it over?
Yeah. So no, I'm just kidding. It's not over. It slowed down. It has slowed down. No doubt about that. I think interest rates, you know, because they have to borrow money, pool it together, go out and buy businesses. And obviously when they're borrowing that money, at 2-3%, the market's going to be a lot more hot than today where they're probably borrowing that same dollar for 6-9%.
Yeah, I think let's get into that. You know, what is the method that corporate generally does in order to, you know, acquire practices? And then people can understand why interest rates I don't know if it's just interest rates. I'm sure that's predominantly what happens. But, you know, I guess number one, why would private equity money like the veterinary industry so much?
Oh, I know that.
Yeah.
It's cash.
It's cash based.
Cash based. You don't have to deal with insurance.
Yep.
If you want to raise your prices, you just do it.
Yep.
And liability. I mean, I'm a dog lover, and I say this with love, but the law views animals, dogs, cats, whatever, they're property. It's right. Not like, you know, it's not the liability of that compared to working on a human is a night and day difference.
Now, are you really a dog lover, or was your wife a dog lover? And because of that.
All right. I grew to love the dog. Let's, that's a whole nother story in itself, but. Rest in peace, Lola.
There you go. So when you look at these businesses, they're very attractive to corporates because, number one, there is a barrier to entry to them. I mean, you have to be a veterinarian to be able to run these things, right? Or you have to have veterinarians to run these things. Yeah. So you better be good at HR and hiring and such. But other than that, they're really great businesses that they look as an opportunity of how do we kind of put these things into like a and conglomerate them together and, you know, get them in a position where we can sell this, all of these separate practices, make them look like one and then get a really high multiple for that when we flip it over. It's just like flipping, it's like flipping houses almost, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they do, it's a little more sophisticated than that, but I mean, that's what it takes. So, you know, they do borrow quite a bit of money to be able to fund these things and to be able to acquire practices. So they do have to pay their investors back. Yeah. Like every private equity group has to have a method in which they pay their investors back. And typically what you'll see is that when you see a veterinary practice get acquired, the first thing that the corporate owners demand is a 10% return to investors, or they call it management fee, whatever they want to call it, right? But that's usually what they see, because they have to pay their investors back, and of course they have to service the loan. So when interest rates go up, obviously that increases the cost of the borrowing, so the valuations are going to come down, which I think is what we've probably seen here in the last, you know, 6 months.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big part. The other part that I've gathered, and this is coming from veterinarian clients who have talked with these groups, but I think the other big part is for 5 years straight, I mean, they really bought anything that you would sell. I mean,
yeah,
they weren't super picky. But they bought up a lot of market share quickly because they're all competing with one another.
Yeah. How many of them are out there right now? It's probably 50 or 60 of these buying groups out there. Yeah.
Something. I mean, they've started condensing. There's been a good number of, you know, this group absorbing that group over the last year or two. But anyways, they bought up all this market share. And once they get big enough, suddenly they can be a lot more picky with what they buy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even some groups out there, I won't name them, but there's some groups that now that they have the market share, they're building practices from the ground up.
Yeah. So they're just they call them de novo, brand new ones, right?
Yep.
And wow. Okay. That's good to know. So now that they've acquired all these practices, cause you're right. They bought some practices that probably wouldn't buy today.
Absolutely.
You know, one to two, the three doctor practices, especially the one to two doctor practices. I mean, they mostly stayed away from the one doctor practices.
For the most part. Yeah. I mean, it was two and up.
You had to have at least two, you know, two vets on, you know, producing, which would include you as the owner. But that required you to have to stay on, you know, to produce.
Of course, for
the next 2 to 4 years. So, you know, look, if you have any desire to sell to corporate, but don't want to stay on, you better make sure you have multiple people,
that are you have to be for that to happen. I mean, we've only seen that happen very few times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in those cases, the owner was really a very, very, very negligible part of the overall production.
Yeah, it was like less than
10%.
Less than 10%. Yep. And then they were able to walk away pretty quickly. Yep. Other than that, you are going to have to stay on and work it. So, yeah.
And I've cautioned a lot of clients about that, hey, don't wait until you're 75 and you can't work anymore to suddenly want to sell, because you're going to be staying on for a couple of years.
Yeah. You're not just going to be able to walk away. Okay. So the corporates are starting to like build up as opposed to build out right now.
Yes.
So they've acquired, you know, a lot of practices, and now I think they're going to kind of focus on growing what they have as opposed to buying brand new ones or buying ones that are already established at this point in time, which should be an opportunity now for, you know, younger veterinarians that want to get into this, and maybe they can buy an existing one doctor practice and then grow it and really establish it. And, you know, at some point in time, sell it for something of value.
Yeah. There's no shortage of one doctor practices where that doctor's looking at wanting to be out in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Cause remember, corporates didn't buy them.
Yeah. And they were left out of the gold rush.
So I think for the most part, you're looking at still a really fragmented industry to that degree. And a really good opportunity for people that are younger to like get in there and, you know, go find someone that has a one doctor practice and build it up, you know?
And I think the other opportunity, and I've heard a good number of clients mention this, is because corporate grew so fast and, you know, such a chunk of the market share, I actually have a lot of private practice clients who are growing even faster now because patients are coming to them specifically because they're not corporate.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. What about the corporate experience? Did you hear anything so far from the people that have been bought? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Overwhelmingly. I mean, everyone loves the money, right? I mean,
it's really hard. There's the thing, you know.
I think
you're going to get about 70% of that money up front paid to you, wired to your bank account. $5 million, $7 million.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's a big piece of the retirement, but. Gosh, I forgot where I was going.
Well, we were talking about like what their experience was like.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I was going to say is, by and large, the predominant complaint that I hear is just your average, now I'm an employee complaint. Because overnight, you're going from the flexibility that you had for the last 15 to 30 years to you're a W-2 employee of a corporate entity.
Yeah.
You know, if you want, you know, a week off to go on a family trip, you got to request that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the dynamics change. Like, you are now back to being an employee again.
Yep.
And albeit you're in a different financial condition than when you were an employee originally, if you ever were, right? Because now you can, you know, basically say, you know, I'm good. I don't need to work anymore. But, you know, you're not, I've heard this, you know, cause I had a couple people that sold here in the last, I'd say 15 months. And, you know, one vet was just like, you know, it was, they're just coming. They just don't move like I would move. They don't make changes like I would make changes. They're a little slower. And I think he was just frustrated, you know, with some of the things, changes that they did make.
Yeah.
Cause they largely tell you, hey, no, we'll just leave you alone and let you do your thing, you know, but let's face it, they're not going to do that.
No, they're going to change a lot of stuff that you're not thinking of, your inventory system, your suppliers, your computer system, your software. I mean, there's a lot that changes. And, I've heard those complaints as well from people, but I think it comes down to from the angle of being an employee, is just get everything you're promised in writing up front. Don't rely on them and their, you know, they're going to tell you everything's going to be good. Nothing's going to change, but get your PTO, get your flexibility, get your, you know, I don't work Wednesdays or whatever it is. Get all of that in writing.
Yeah.
Or it may not come true.
Yeah. Definitely get it in writing. Because they are going to change a lot of these things. And they're going to change the way they look at profitability and calculate profitability, you know. So this is why I don't really like the earnouts, because, you know, they can, if they say, hey, look, for you to get fully compensated from the sale, it's going to be based upon the profitability of the business. And if you can't keep it consistent, you're going to get less money. Now, I haven't seen many earnouts recently, but I think they're probably doing a lot more, especially if you are going to sell and then you lose a couple of veterinarians right off the bat because they don't want to be corporate owned.
Yep.
That's happened as well. So, all right. I think we've beat up corporate enough. What about alternative methods of transitioning out of your practice? So what are some other, let's talk about, like, you don't always have to sell to corporate.
No.
You know, it's like, you don't have to. And it's not like you're going to miss out on getting, you know, money just because of that. Now, you may not get the same multiples. Speaking of multiples, I think the peak multiples were like 20, 22.
Yep.
Somewhere around there. And now I think they've come down to like in that 12 to maybe 15 range.
I agree.
I don't know if they've gotten any higher than that.
I haven't seen it since the start of, you know, 2022.
Which, you know, you can, let's face it, you can bitch and complain about that, but a 12 to 15 multiple, that's still pretty awesome.
Oh yeah. Compared to historically, that's still way abnormally high.
Yes. So, I mean, you know, any other industry that we deal with, I still haven't seen multiples reach that high.
No one gets, most other professions are getting half of that at best.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. Or you'd have to have just a super duper, you know, huge practice to be able to qualify for something like that. So, okay. So let's talk about some alternative methods. Like, what else could I do? Okay. I don't really want to sell to corporate. What else could I do?
Well, you could sell to a younger associate.
Yep.
I have somebody doing that right now where she is selling, I want to say 20% to him every couple of years until she phases out.
Yep.
I had another client of mine who just sold to another husband, wife, doctor. They're local and they're just trying to buy up market share.
Okay. So let's do the first one. Cause that would be like, okay, having an associate that you bring on that you can mentor. And so they're doing 20% buy-ins over a period of time. Are they financing that with the bank or is that being seller financed?
I want to say it's part like half and half.
Okay. So you can do both.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah. And veterinary lending is usually pretty,
it's pretty favorable.
Yeah. It's really favorable. I mean, if you talk to bankers about the veterinary industry, they love it.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's like a very, very, very small default rate. So, it's a great area for them to lend because they have a lot of confidence and trust in this industry. But in that case, if you're going to sell to an associate, look, I mean, there's some things you're going to have to do. You're going to have to make sure that you bring them on fairly slowly, get them really producing, and then start introducing some executive and owner functions on a gradient so that they can get comfortable with the concept. Because I think most new vets or younger vets are probably scared to death about ownership. They see all the problems that you have with employees, finding vets, you know, huge loans, student loan debt, all that stuff. And they're probably scared to death of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the student loans, I hear that constantly.
Yeah.
You know, they're scared. They're coming out with $200,000-$300,000 worth of debt. And the idea of turning around and taking on another $500,000 to $1 million worth of debt, it's scary.
Totally scary. But that being said, you can outgrow that. And you can, once they get confidence in ownership and that it can pay off, and it is a risk. I mean, that's why it's a risk, because it pays so well and it can pay really, really well. And yeah, you know, there's headaches to it, and yeah, there's, you know, all these things to it. But, you know, if you find a good deal with a stable practice that has the ability to grow, and, you know, I would, I'd be all over that as a young owner, you know, just as long as that, that other owner there really made it so that I could win. So, you know, you can't, there's some things you're going to have to give up, you know, if you're going to do that. I mean, you're not going to get the 10 to 15 multiples in doing something like that. If you want to do an internal transfer like that, the multiple, the values of the business are going to be a little bit lower. But here's the benefit to you. Number one, you get to stay on. You can still control it until they ultimately buy you out. Okay. You can keep the cash flow going for you. And you know, you can charge an interest rate too, if you're going to sell or finance, and, you know, get 6% on your money or 7% on your money, you know, which, you know, typically you wouldn't be able to do anywhere else. So it's not like there aren't advantages to it. You're just not going to get the huge, you know, $7 million payout or $5 million payout.
Yeah. And I think a part of that too, I've heard this from a lot of clients, is just keeping the practice private is worth, at least to them, it's worth giving up that extra money.
Yeah. Yeah. It shouldn't all be about the money. It should be about, like, all right, what's going to be in the best interest of just the employees, this new owner, myself, the patients, everybody else? Like, what is this going to look like that is beneficial for all of them? So that would be a good one. I wish more people would do that. I don't see that enough.
I think
the younger generation just doesn't, they don't want to do surgeries and they don't want to own and they don't want to do this and they don't want to do that. That may be kind of like the group think mindset.
I think everybody complains about the generation below them.
They always say that, but they're really complaining about, like, an overall group think that they see, right? It's not what an individual thinks. Like, if you get someone that's, you know, in their 20s and 30s and you put them in a situation where they can win, and you really do a good job making them see that, then they're going to see that.
Yeah.
You know, you just need one. So you just have to be able to, like, get through the groupthink, whatever it is that you see out there.
No, and all of these recent associate buyouts, and I've had a couple of them, and all of them, the doctors are 28 to 35. I mean, they're out there.
They're totally out there. You know, any individual that gets into the business that can see, I can make a good living for myself. Being 28, 30 years old, you know, okay, so I got this big loan for the next 10 years. I'm 38.
Yeah.
I'm 40 years old at that point in time. And now I can, you know, take the advantages of it at that point. Okay. And then you mentioned the other option, which would be sell to a competitor, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a veterinarian do that. She sold to, it was a husband wife team. They're both doctors. They own their own practice across town, and they bought her up to just increase their market share in the area.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something that a lot of people can do, especially if you have the cash to do it or credit lines to do it. If you want to do it yourself, you could just go find some guys that are ready to get out, and they're going to have to stay on for a period of time until you can recruit. But it may be worth it to add, especially if you're looking to sell like a package of practices to a bigger group, you could totally do that as well.
And that's what I think these guys were doing, is I think they were buying up, you know, 3 to 5 local practices, and then they would turn around and ultimately sell them to a bigger buyer at some point.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it allowed this doctor, a single doctor practice, to get out at a attractive amount, and, you know, it all worked out.
Yeah. I mean, it can all work out. I mean, but I think the thing is, you have to make sure that your practice, it looks like something that's worth something.
Yes. And hers certainly was. She is a great producer, good profit margins, good stable staff. I mean, it was a phenomenally ran location.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter who you're selling to. If you got a practice that is unprofitable, that is, I don't know, you know, not stable, has a lot of turnover. I mean, you got to go fix yourself first.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to have something that has any value to it. So most of you guys can go in there and really, you know, look at your profitability and, you know, make some adjustments, on that. I mean, that's certainly something that we look at with a lot of practice owners when they first come to us. We're like, okay, let's take a look at your profitability and see what this looks like. And in most cases, it's just a function of, you know, raising prices a lot of the time, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, most vets are, they're hesitant to raise prices. And in my experience, the biggest barrier to it is their own mind. I mean, clients expect prices to go up.
Everybody kind of does.
It's part of life.
Yeah, it really is. So that's something that I think, you know, people just need to reconcile. You got to be better owners. You have to, you know, establish some systems. You have to make sure that everyone knows the purpose, the vision of the organization. These are just some common sense things that you can do, but they have a really big impact on the value of the practice. So, okay. Anything else on the, on this? Any other alternative methods of transitioning out of your practice? I think those are the main ones right there. Corporate, associates, and then associate buy-in or buyout, and then you can sell to a competitor. I don't think I've seen anything else.
Yeah, those three really cover 100% of sales that I've seen.
Yeah.
I don't really can't think of any other way to do it. I mean, besides giving it away to your kids or something.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not a sale.
Yeah. That's kind of a rare thing to do that people would see. You can gift it away. But like I said, most people are probably
99% of people aren't going to gift their practice.
No, but again, to kind of wrap it up, it does start with, you got to have something of value to sell to somebody, because regardless of who you're selling to, most of the valuations are going to be done on the basis of your profitability, your earnings.
Yes.
Okay. And if your net profit, or adjusted net profit, whatever fancy terms that the accountants want to come up with, is not in the range, you know, where it should be, at least 20%, then, you know, you're going to see smaller valuations. And if you can keep it above that number right there, then you should be able to at least get a fair market value valuation, if not above market value valuation. And that is the most important part. So that's why you really need to make sure you have a financial team that's looking out for that, that's showing you how to increase that. And then more importantly, showing you how to get your financial house in order so that you can, when you do sell, you make sure that you're going to have enough so you never have to worry about working again.
Yep.
So that's the key on that. Okay. That was good. And we'll see you guys next week, and have a great week.
You have been listening to the Financial Beast podcast, where we talk about how to turn practice profits into personal financial wealth. For more information on how to become a financial beast in practice ownership, visit financialbeastpodcast.com. You may also want to call the office at 727-588-1540 to request more information on becoming a client, or arrange to have Eric speak at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or financialbeastpodcast.com.